This is Invest Talk from KPP Financial, helping investors make sense of the markets one day at a time. Here's your host, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to the Tuesday, June 23rd, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and I'll be with you over the next hour as we dissect the market today, talk about all the stories that matter, and answer your finance and investment questions. But before we do all that, because it is almost here, because our newest wealth webinar is set for Tuesday, June 30th, that is 1 week away from noon to 1 Pacific, I wanted to remind you that if you were interested in being a part of our webinar, Beyond the Yield, How to Invest for Your Income Needs, you're going to need to head over to our website and register. As always, it is free, but you must register to attend at investtalk.com. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics. But why don't we start by tackling our first caller question now?
Hi there. Just have a quick question about getting some exposure into utilities. And I wanted to see the ETF JXI was any good just for some broad exposure to utilities. I don't know a ton about specific individual utility companies, but I saw that this ETF has exposure to quite a few holdings and wanted to see if it was a good runner for some utility exposure. Thanks so much. Bye.
Well, JXI is the iShares Global Utilities ETF. It is a passive ETF that tracks the S&P Global 1200 Utility Sector Capped Index. It invests in electric, in gas, in water utilities across global, developed, and emerging markets. It is actually the only large cap global utilities ETF available to U.S. retail investors from a major provider. Now, it is, as you would expect, pretty dominated by its top holdings. Its top 10 make up about 43% of its total assets. NextEra, Iberdrola, Southern Company, Duke Energy, Constellation, those are the top five. They make up roughly 35-36% of the fund itself. And in terms of expenses, I mean, it's about 39 basis points, which for a fund that is investing internationally and in emerging markets as well, isn't really all that expensive. Compared to its peers, though, it is a bit more expensive. XLU, which is the Spider U.S. utility, so only U.S., not international emerging exposure. It's probably the largest utilities fund. I mean, that's much cheaper. That's 9 basis points. But overall, if you're looking for global diversification, because 55% of this is U.S. and 35% of it is European utilities, and essentially what you're doing then versus the normal U.S. Only index is you're hedging against AI data center power demand in both the U.S. and in Europe, which are two simultaneous secular tailwinds. Also, maybe you think the dollar is a bit weaker or is going to be a bit weaker. That would amplify European returns. And you're doing it for about a 2.5% dividend yield is where it currently sits. I think overall it is a well-constructed global utility wrapper for investors who want to own this AI power demand story and the European energy transition story simultaneously. Morningstar gave it a bronze. I mean, it's up almost 19% over the past 52 weeks. And you do get genuine geographic and market diversification, all for a cost of about 40 basis points. Frankly, I think if you want that European exposure and you think the dollar weakness is going to be a tailwind and that's going to help it along, this is a perfectly good way to go about getting that global utility exposure. That is JXI, the iShares Global Utilities ETF. Thanks for the call. Well, we had another great show yesterday. We looked into how what is going on in 2026 looks a lot like 2022. And so we provided investors with a checklist to invest for the rest of the year. We also answered a listener question on Ethereum. It was submitted through our YouTube channel. If you happen to miss it, go check it out. The best way, of course, to never miss an episode is to follow Invest Talk wherever you get your podcasts. Now on to today, we have a lot to talk about, including A little bit of a paradox with AI spending, because hyperscalers are being left behind as the trade evolves. The AI trade has dramatically outpaced the hyperscalers, who are supposedly its biggest beneficiaries, even as big tech stock buybacks disappear under the weight of massive AI capex. Investors are now understandably asking whether the AI infrastructure build-out will ever translate into the returns that justify these sky-high valuations. Also, a story about AI data centers and how, really across the political spectrum, they are facing backlash in American communities. Another story on low-cost loans from the U.S. government and how the government is hoping it will revive nuclear power. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch a little bit on mortgage rates and where they stand. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Apple Hospitality REIT, ticker APLE, and another on Bitcoin. As always, we got some questions that came in from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel, and I hope to hear from some of you live over the next 50 minutes. Well, we're going into a break. It is a quick one. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the Invest Talk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. When we come back, we'll talk about the market today.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here, taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
U.S. stocks finished lower yet again as this momentum unwind hit semis and memory pretty hard, and that dragged the NASDAQ down 2.2% as the S&P was off 1.4%. The Dow was essentially flat. Russell 2000 lost about one percentage point as well. But the story underneath the surface was different. Breadth was slightly positive. An equal weight S&P outperformed the cap-weighted index by about 110 basis points. This isn't a broad-based risk off. This is, more than anything, a concentrated unwind. Now, the selling in semis and memory appeared to be driven more by market structure than any fundamentals, though there's no shortage of AI scrutiny to attach to the move. I mean, you have open source competition, you got capacity competition, frontier models, cost, CapEx ROI concerns. And a research note flagging 2027 memory price weakness all made the rounds today, potentially shifting this sell-off into high gear. NVIDIA and Tesla led the MAG 7 lower, though some of the other mega caps and SpaceX actually bounced, having recently served as funding sources. We saw some outperformance in defensive pockets of the market. You saw airlines, regional banks, tobacco, pharma, medtech, all in the green. Now, the macro backdrop still remains solid. Flash PMIs surprised to the upside, with manufacturing hitting a 49-month high and services at a 4-month high, though employment fell for a second straight month and prices remained elevated. You had ADP weekly payrolls broke a 4-week streak of declines. You had a 2-year auction that stopped through by 0.3 basis points, though the yield of 4.189% was the highest since January of 2025, a reminder of where rate cut expectations really have shifted. The market is currently pricing about 40 basis points of hikes through year end. Hikes. Concerns about the implications for bond volatility from the Fed shift away from forward guidance, also something that could continue to weigh on yields. But that all being said, otherwise, pretty quiet day, right? You didn't have much on the geopolitical front, though that is, I would say, fitting, given the market has a clear interest in moving past the Iran situation. But with that, crude oil did settle up 1%, or rather settled down 1% after Monday's 2.5% drop. Elsewhere, the dollar hit its highest level since May of 2025. Gold fell 1.3%. Silver dropped 5.4%. Bitcoin futures were off about 3.3% on the day. And the big news, again, from SpaceX, who's been raising a bunch of capital recently. I think they raised about $20 to $25 billion in debt today. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, big earnings from Micron at the close tomorrow. That'll be the next test of the AI demand narrative. Thursday will bring us a PCE report. That is the week's main macro event, alongside durable goods as well as claims. Now let's get back to answering your finance and investment questions. This question is a fresh question from the YouTube comment section question bank, and it's about ticker LMT. It says, have Lockheed Martin on my watch list, wondering if it may be a good time to buy soon on its downtrend, but it's also missed its expected earnings the last two quarters. What are your thoughts on this stock? Thanks for all that you do. Let's take a look at ticker LMT, which is Lockheed Martin Corporation. Of course, one of the big five global security and aerospace companies. They are the world's largest defense contractor. They have that crown jewel of their army, if you will, the F-35 fighter, the F-16, the C-130, Black Hawk helicopters, THAAD missile defense systems, space systems, hypersonic missiles. They actually have four segments. So they got their aeronautics, they got their missiles and fire control, they got their rotary and mission systems, and they have space. Now, recently, and you flagged it, Q4 2025 and Q1 2026, earnings have been a bit poor. In Q4, you missed on both top and bottom lines. You know, in Q1 of this year, you saw zero revenue growth year over year. Earnings declined 11.5%. Free cash flow went negative. I mean, the stock dropped nearly 5% on the report, and for the most part has continued to fall, though it is up about 2% on the day. Now, what really went wrong here is severe production bottlenecks. Lockheed is running years behind schedule on critical deliveries. And on top of that, you have these cost overruns on legacy programs. What is going on with their F-16? What is going on with their C-130 is eating into margins. And then they had to partner with GM Defense under a Defense Production Act mandate just to address some of the munitions shortages in the U.S. Army. And then 3 days ago, I mean, it dropped another 4% on news of a potential Iran ceasefire and the Strait reopening. You have institutional investors aggressively rotating out of defense and into growth cyclical sectors. And so that's the high risk here, is a meaningful portion of LMT's recent valuation was conflict-driven. It was a conflict-driven premium, and you can see how that can evaporate overnight. And right now, I mean, it's trading about the average of price to forward-looking earnings. And the bull case here, and it is compelling at these levels, is that earnings misses may have actually reset a stock that had become too stretched. Right, it's now trading at a 20 to 30% discount to its estimated intrinsic value. For blue chip defense prime, I mean, that's pretty solid. At the same time, their five-year shareholder return is still 54.42%. And their backlog is absolutely massive. It is years of deliveries that are already contracted. So this is kind of how I'd think about it, right? The stock has pulled back about 27%. It's deeply oversold technically. But oversold doesn't mean buy immediately. It means, you know, stocks can stay oversold. With this uncertainty, that adds a near-term wildcard related to Iran. If peace holds, defense stocks could have another leg down before stabilizing. Upcoming earnings is the next major catalyst, I would say, July 28th. A beat may restore confidence, but a third miss, I mean, it could send this thing well below the 500 level. So if you want to get into it, I mean, I think it's a good name. I think its valuation isn't as stretched as it has been, which is certainly good given the run-up even before the war. I would probably start with a small position here or there if you wanted to enter. I think the long-term thesis of European rearmament, NATO expansion, hypersonic missile defense, that all is standing there. The question is, you know, short-term execution is the problem. And that's what you really need to watch out for. That is LMT, Lockheed Martin. Thanks for the call. Headed into a break. When we come back, more to come, including my main focus point and more answers to your finance and investment questions here on Invest Talk.
It's coming up fast. An all-new Invest Talk Wealth Webinar. Beyond the Yield, how to invest for your income needs. This coming Tuesday, June 30th, noon to 1 Pacific Time. Online and free of charge, but you must pre-register at investtalk.com. And now the InvestTalk phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
The Department of Energy announced $17.5 billion and low interest loans to finance equipment orders for 10 Westinghouse AP1000 nuclear reactors. Five loans will be available for projects with two reactors each. Seven utilities have already signed formal letters of intent. Energy Secretary Chris Wright called it the beginning of the next American nuclear renaissance. Now, this is significant because nuclear power has been effectively paralyzed in the U.S. for decades. The only AP1000s built domestically to units at Georgia's Vogtle plant were originally budgeted at $14 billion and ultimately exceeded $30. They were supposed to be completed in 2016 or 2017, and they didn't come online until 2023, 2024. A similar project in South Carolina was abandoned in 2017 after costs spiraled past $9 billion. After those disasters, no utility wanted to be next in line. The DOE's approach is designed to break the cost spiral. By making a steady series of bulk equipment purchases through government-backed loans, the nuclear supply chain gets supercharged. Manufacturing starts while projects are still making their way through permitting and regulatory approval. Westinghouse has standardized the AP1000 design based on the last reactor build at Vogtle, so all parts, they are interchangeable. If one project falls behind, equipment can be redirected to others. And Westinghouse is offering fixed-price contracts for equipment, giving utilities stable pricing. Each AP1000 produces about 1,100 megawatts, enough to power a mid-sized city or a major AI data center. The new reactors could come online starting in 2035. Now, that's a decade away, but for an industry that has built new capacity since hasn't really built any capacity since the early 90s, it represents a genuine restart. The AI connection is direct. Data centers need reliable baseload power that doesn't depend on weather or fuel price volatility. Nuclear provides exactly that. Tech companies have been backing nuclear through long-term power purchase agreements, the kind of 20-year commitments that the DOE said would likely be needed to get these projects into construction. Outside the U.S., Westinghouse has built four AP1000s in China, which then licensed, modified, and mass-produced the CAP1000 design. 11 more are under construction there. China has figured out how to build a nuclear at industrial scale. The U.S., we're trying to catch up, and the DOE loans are the first serious attempt to do so. So for investors, the nuclear theme plays across several instruments. Uranium miners and enrichment companies benefit from growing demand for fuel. Westinghouse's parent company and its suppliers benefit from equipment orders, utilities, nuclear ambitions. They benefit from government financing that de-risks their projects. And the broader energy infrastructure theme, well, it gets another catalyst. Nuclear power provides about one-fifth of U.S. electricity generation. With demand surging from AI, EVs, and electrification, that share needs to grow. And for the first time in decades, there's a credible path to making it happen. Let's keep things moving and drop in another listener question now.
This is TJ. I'm calling from the Desert Castle in Palm Desert. I meet every week with my colleague, and we discuss investments. And my colleague's really pushing me on Bitcoin to diversify. He says it's a piece of real estate you have to own. What is your perspective on Bitcoin, and do I need to be in this asset? It seems speculative to me, but I just want to know from your thoughts if it's an important asset to be in, if you think I should be in it for the long term. Thank you very much.
Well, Bitcoin is as speculative as it is volatile. And we've seen as it marched from 16,000 to 120,000 and back down to where it stands today, that volatility can be painful and it can be dramatic. Now, my problem with the Bitcoin evangelists generally is they take an all or nothing approach. You need to own so much Bitcoin because it's going to be the money of the future. Is it? Probably not. I've stated the reasons why, not the least of which is the fact that we still price Bitcoin in dollars and you still need to pay for things in the physical world by off-ramping that Bitcoin. And there is no incentive from the financial system and those that run it to allow an alternative source of capital. And there's also no benefit to the U.S. government for allowing an alternative source of payment, not capital, but payment. But just because something is speculative and volatile doesn't mean it doesn't have a place in your portfolio. And so if you wanted to have 5% or less than 5% of your portfolio's Bitcoin exposure, it is a high-risk thing. It could go to zero, certainly could, Or it could not move at all. Returns could be flat. They could be negative over the next decade. But at a 5% or fewer allocation, I think the risk reward there can certainly be in your favor. So I don't know what your friend's telling you to do. I don't know if your friend is saying mortgage the house, sell your car, sell your cat, sell your dog, and buy Bitcoin. But having it be a small portion of an overall holistically managed portfolio, I don't see anything wrong with that. Thanks for the call. Now, on the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story, Fed speak versus geopolitics, which force actually drives markets more? The past week delivered a rare national experiment. Major Fed communications and a historic Middle East ceasefire happened simultaneously, giving investors a live stress test of what truly moves markets. Dissecting which force had more power over stock prices, bond yields, and the dollar can sharpen every investor's macro framework going forward. That's tomorrow. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls anytime at 888-99-CHART.
At KPP Financial, accountability means more than advice. It means we invest alongside you. Through our parallel investing approach, when we recommend an investment for clients, one or more KPP principals invest their own capital at the same time. Same day, same price, same percentage. If your portfolio moves, ours does too. That is alignment. That is transparency. That is the KPP difference. Visit investtalk.com to get your free portfolio review.
Stop guessing with supplements. Most of us take vitamins blindly, wasting time and money. Your body is unique, and it deserves better. Introducing True Diagnostic, an easy at-home health test. With a quick finger prick, True Diagnostic uses advanced epigenetic testing to analyze over 1 million data points and measure up to 180 biomarkers. You will receive clear digital results with a personalized 90-day actionable plan to improve health, boost energy, and slow down your aging process. There is absolutely no guesswork and no generic advice. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off at TrueDiagnostic.com using code INVEST20 at checkout. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code INVEST20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or subscription. True Diagnostic, spelled TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Use code INVEST20 for 20% off today.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today is about AI's spending paradox. So here is that paradox, and it really should make every tech investor, well, a bit uncomfortable. The PHLX Semiconductor Index is up nearly 70% year-to-date. Memory stocks have tripled. The AI supply chain has been among the best performing trades in market history, but the hyperscalers, the companies actually building all the infrastructure, well, they've collectively underperformed the broader market. Alphabet, Amazon, Microsoft, Meta, Oracle, they're spending somewhere between $650 to $755 billion on capital expenditure in 2026, depending on which estimate you use. That's a 70 to 83% increase from last year, and roughly 200% more than 2024, and the market kind of stopped rewarding them for it. Now, the reason, to put it bluntly, is math. PIMCO reported that CapEx is projected to absorb 94% of hyperscalers' operating cash flow in 2026. 2 years ago, that figure was well below 50, with nearly every dollar a company generates goes back into building data centers, GPUs, networking equipment. There's nothing left for the thing that kept those stocks rising for the past decade, buybacks. Goldman Sachs warned that buybacks could fall from 34% of hyperscaler spending to just 20 Bloomberg reported that big tech's AI spending spree is literally making stock buybacks disappear. For years, buybacks were one of the most reliable support beams for those stocks. They reduced share counts, they boosted earnings per share, and created a persistent source of demand for the stock themselves. When that support beam weakens, and it's weakening fast, the stocks need earnings growth alone to carry the burden. And earnings growth, while still strong at 17.4%, that's what's expected in 2026, is decelerating from 18% in 2024 to 14% revenue growth. 2025 to 16.5% projected this year. CapEx is growing at 40 to 83% while revenue grows 16.5%. That gap makes the market a little anxious. The hyperscalers have also turned to the debt markets in a major way. PIMCO noted that index-eligible new debt issuance from hyperscalers has totaled approximately $136 billion year-to-date. That already surpasses the full year 2025 figure. Barclays expects hyperscaler debt issuance to exceed $200 billion this year, climb even higher next year. Alphabet, they had a record $85 billion equity raise. That was the most dramatic example, but the pattern is across the board. These companies are issuing both debt and equity to fund AI CapEx because operating cash flow alone just can't cover it. Now, the cautionary tale, in a way, is Oracle, which went furthest in leverage in terms of its balance sheet for AI. Its five-year credit default swap spread, essentially the cost of insuring against Oracle defaulting, widened from 40 bips at the start of 2025 to 2% by March 2026, implying a 16% default probability. S&P and Moody's both moved to a negative outlook. Stock fell 60% from its September 2025 peak. The sequence matters. The equity market rewards ambition. The credit market repriced the risk. And the equity market eventually caught up to reality. In CapEx-heavy regimes, credit spreads can be a more reliable early warning indicator than stock prices ever will be. Now, the market has responded by becoming sharply selective. Goldman noted that the average stock price correlation across large AI hyperscalers has declined from about 80% to just 20%. Investors are no longer treating the group as a monolith. They are separating the companies that can demonstrate a clear link between CapEx and revenue, like some cloud platform operators, for those where spending appears disconnected from near-term returns. The AI trade hasn't ended, it's evolved. The returns have migrated from the builders to the beneficiaries. The companies generating the strongest returns for investors right now sit at different points in the supply chain. Semiconductor and memory companies, NVIDIA, Micron, SanDisk, SK Hynix, Samsung, they are capturing the immediate demand for AI hardware. Their margins, historic highs, because supply can't keep up with demand. Memory markets are trading at 7 to 9 times forward earnings despite 80-cent gross margins. The infrastructure services companies, they're monetizing GPU access. The application layer companies will eventually capture the recurring revenue stream from AI deployment. Now, the hyperscaler position is complicated. They are simultaneously the primary funders of the AI revolution, the largest cloud platforms that will ultimately monetize it, and increasingly leverage entities whose free cash flow is now consumed by the buildout. The next phase of the AI trade will involve platform stocks that can show revenue flowing from AI adoption and productivity beneficiaries, companies in healthcare, finance, legal, other industries where AI adoption drives measurable efficiency gains. At some point, CapEx becomes a red flag rather than a growth signal. That point arrives when spending exceeds what the company can fund from operations and when the incremental return on invested capital declines. Now, we're approaching that zone. For at least some hyperscalers, the market's willingness to reward AI spending peaked when investors trusted that every dollar spent would generate more than a dollar in future revenue. Now, they're demanding proof, and proof in the form of AI-driven revenue that scales faster than the CapEx needed to deliver it, that's been harder to find than the industry promised. Bottom line, AI buildout is real, the demand is genuine, and the infrastructure is necessary. But the investment thesis has to evolve. From bet on the builders to bet on the companies that generate returns from what's being built. The hyperscalers may eventually win. Their cloud platforms give them distribution advantages that startups just cannot match. But right now, they're spending too much money. They are issuing too much debt. They are issuing too much equity and generating too little free cash flow for the market to reward them. The picks and shovels trade that worked in 2023 to 2025 is giving way to a more selective market that demands cash flow, not CapEx, as the measure of AI success. This is Invest Talk, nearing 63 million lifetime downloads, and it's all thanks to you. Because of that, why don't we answer another one of your listener questions now?
Hello, Jason and Luke. This is Paul from Gaithersburg, Maryland. I have a question about Apple Hospitality REIT for you guys, ticker symbol APLE. It has had quite the run lately, and I'm up about 10%. I wanted to wait a little bit longer and then take some profits because it's been lately at the top of its price range. So I thought it might be a good time to take some profits and maybe get in later again because the volatility of the stock seems to be that it has a way to run down, but also a way to run up again. So I was curious what you guys think about that. Hope you have a great day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Apple Hospitality REIT, ticker APLE, is a Richmond, Virginia-based select service hotel REIT. So they own just over 200 hotels with almost 30,000 rooms and operate exclusively under Marriott, Hilton, and Hyatt brands across both urban, suburban, and developing U.S. markets. They are the largest publicly traded selective service hotel REIT by room count, focusing on upper mid-scale and upscale segments. Now, there is a notable re-rating here because you mentioned they've done really well, and year-to-date, they're about 40%. I mean, they have surged from a 52-week low of roughly 1085 to about 1660 now. That is a 53% move, and that was driven by a guidance raise and also a bit of a catalyst from all this demand from the FIFA World Cup. So it's important to note that the analyst average price target's about $15.50 now, and that sits below the current price. That is obviously not indicative of a rule that is set in stone about where things are going to move, but it's still important to note. Now, looking at the last quarter, looks like revenue was up 3.1% year over year, not dramatically higher, but certainly growth. They did beat estimates by about 3.8%. Earnings per share came out at about 12 cents, which beat 11 cents. That's a 9% beat on that side as well. And comparable hotel RevPAR up about 2.2% year over year. Occupancy was up about 2.1 points year over year. Total debt looks like it decreased over the previous quarter as well. And I mean, it's pretty liquid name. Now, revenue guidance was raised by about 1%. Anytime you get revenue guidance raised or any type of guidance raised, that is the type of catalyst that markets really like because it gets people to reprice expectations. And that kind of consensus surprise moves things higher. And in turn, Barclays raised their price target. Cantor Fitzgerald raised their price target. BMO Capital Markets raised their price target after this guidance raise. One thing that I imagine you like is that for the past 3 years, this has had a pretty solid dividend, but that's only because of where the price has moved in the past 2 years, really. I mean, the dividend yield is sitting at roughly, where are we at right now? 5.8% right now. It's a pretty juicy dividend at $16.59, where this thing's currently trading. I mean, they have 37% net leverage. They have a conservative balance sheet, right? They got $559 million in liquidity, about 73% occupancy with room to grow. And for them, you know, they operate their hotels under some of the most trusted consumer brands in hospitality. I would say overall, this is a well-run REIT that has staged a remarkable recovery from its lows. But where it is now, it's trading above every analyst price target. EBIT is contracting, zero buy ratings. You're essentially paying full price for a solid but pedestrian growth story. So I would consider trimming into this World Cup strength. I would consider taking some of my profits here and reallocating because I think this is pretty stretched despite a lot of optimism from management and analysts. That is Apple Hospitality REIT, ticker APLE. Now, from time to time, We get questions via web forms from investtalk.com. So here's one that came in on ticker KWEB, which is, pause for dramatic effect, the CranShares CSI China Internet ETF. It says KWEB is trading at a good entry price right now. Or rather, the question is it trading at a good entry price? Well, first off, what is this? Well, it's a pure play exposure to China's internet and tech sector. So it's essentially the ETF that tracks the Chinese equivalents of your Google, Amazon, Meta, Netflix. Right? They have communication services. They've got cyclicals, healthcare, real estate. Their top holdings are names I'm sure you're familiar with. Alibaba, Tencent, PD Holdings, JD.com, Baidu, NetEase. But is it a good entry? Right? It's trading near the bottom of its 52-week range. There's a lot of bad news that has been priced in because of this. I mean, China's 15th five-year plan emphasizes technological self-reliance. So there's direct policy report support for the companies that KWEB holds. Their annual data volumes grew by about 26% on an annualized rate from 2023 to 2026. It ranks first in the world. So the data feeds AI model training for Alibaba, for Baidu, for Tencent. I mean, their top 10 holdings have, looks like, grown revenue by an average of 11% year over year. But at the same time, I mean, the 12-month price prediction based on historical seasonality is only 25.66 from an analyst consensus basis. It's trading about 25.05 right now. The technical trend is absolutely horrendous. And there's a lot of macro risks, right? U.S.-China trade tensions that can reignite at any time. Property deleveraging spillover is continuing. Chinese GDP has been moderating. And then there's that perennial wildcard, right? That regulatory risk. Beijing has a history of cracking down on its own tech companies without warning. So, you know, one other thing I want to point out is taking a look at long track record. KWEB looks like it was at 104 in February 2021. It's currently 25, meaning it's down 76% from that peak. So investors who bought during the 2021 hype, absolutely destroyed. The fund has essentially round-tripped multiple times. It surges on stimulus, on policy optimism, then absolutely crashes. So bottom line, I mean, the entry is cheap. It's near its 52-week lows, but cheap doesn't really mean safe. It's been cheap before, and it's gotten cheaper. As a small allocation on potentially high growth, understanding the volatility, I think it's fine. As a core investment, I wouldn't put it there. And if you want to enter, I'd probably dollar cost average because how much this thing has whipsawed back and forth. I would say the catalyst to watch is U.S.-China trade relationships, right? If that continues to stabilize, Beijing follows through on its tech-supportive policies. If it doesn't, this thing could be coming a bit cheaper pretty soon. That is KEB, the CranShares CSI China Internet ETF. Sorry, it's KWEB. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here, and it's to help you achieve your financial freedom. To that end, I want to mention one final time that our newest InvestTalk Wealth webinar is upcoming 1 week from today from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific, and it is called Beyond the Yield, where we will go over how to structure your portfolio for your income needs. If you want to join us for our presentation and our live Q&A afterwards, head over to investtalk.com and register today. Well, folks, we are headed into our final break. So if you got that question that you just cannot wait to have answered, pick up that phone and dial 888-99-CHART. You spend lots of time optimizing your portfolio, researching positions, managing risk, and leveraging the power of compounding. So, here's a question you need to take seriously. What could poor sleep actually be costing you? We know that sleep deprivation can degrade your cognitive performance, decision quality, emotional regulation, and temperature is a key factor in determining quality sleep. Finally, the temperature regulation challenge has been solved by the ChiliPad 2.0, a water-based mattress topper. It actively controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees all night to get you into deep, restorative sleep faster and keep you there longer. It works on your existing mattress, so a new bed is not needed. visit www.sleep.me/invest to get up to $255 off a ChiliPad 2.0. This special offer is available for InvestTalk listeners and only for a limited time. Order it today and get your 30-day sleep trial with free shipping and free returns. Go to www.sleep.me/invest and see why cool sleep is worth every cent.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
While the AI spending debate has been about financials, there is a physical world constraint that's getting less attention but could matter just as much. Americans do not want data centers in their neighborhoods, and they are increasingly succeeding in stopping them. At least 20 data center projects worth $42 billion and 3.5 gigawatts of power were canceled in the first 3 months of 2026 after local pushback. Over the past 3 years, $85 billion worth of projects have been scrapped, including sites proposed by Amazon and Meta. This is happening everywhere. Iowa, Michigan, Texas, Virginia. The opposition crosses party lines. Three-quarters of Ohio Democrats and two-thirds of Ohio Republicans oppose local data center development. The scale of what's being planned is staggering. An estimated $3 trillion will go into AI data centers globally between this year and 2030, according to Moody's. America alone, total AI computing capacity is projected to grow from just under 12 gigawatts to as much as 60 by the end of the decade. Currently, there are about a terawatt of large load grid connection requests across American states, nearly equal to the entire capacity of the American electrical grid. Meta's Prometheus project in Ohio will dedicate an entire gigawatt, enough to power a million homes, to AI. Housed in six giant military-grade tents on a site the size of an airport terminal. Surveys show Americans would sooner live next to a nuclear plant than a data center. The issue has surged in salience to the point where gubernatorial candidates are routinely quizzed on their positions. Now, the Trump administration has circumvented some local opposition by building on federal lands. A 10-gigawatt SoftBank-funded project in Piketon, Ohio was announced on federal property, avoiding normal permitting processes. Energy Secretary Chris Wright told The Economist that ensuring AI leadership is the overriding goal of his tenure, and the data centers need to get permitted, and they need to get built. For investors, the NIMBY constraint, it's real. And not only is it real, I would say it's a bit underappreciated. If enough projects get blocked, or if enough projects get delayed, the compute shortage that's already throttling AI usage, I mean, look at it. Anthropic has throttled model usage. OpenAI is scrapping its video tool. Microsoft is repricing its coding assistant. These issues that are already affecting consumers, they don't get better, they get worse. Now, that is bullish for companies that already have capacity. The hyperscalers that have operational data centers. And it's bearish for the timeline on which new capacity comes online. And this is kind of an important story, because oftentimes people talk about the money that's being spent. But the reality is, the AI build-out doesn't just need capital. It needs permission. It needs permission from the communities in which this money is going to be spent. And across the board, those communities, for the most part, are rejecting those projects. Because of that, permission is getting a bit harder to obtain, and maybe the real constraint isn't in the financial economy, but in the physical, real world. Well, folks, that does it for another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which, of course, you can get anytime at iTunes as well as Spotify. And while you're over there, we would really appreciate it if you left a rate and a review wherever you get your podcasts. I know I mentioned it a couple times, but I want to do it one more, and that is that our newest wealth webinar is set for Tuesday, June 30th, 1 week from today, from noon to 1 Pacific time. It is titled Beyond the Yield, How to Invest for Your Income Needs, and it is free so long as you head over to investtalk.com and register. While you're over there, you may see a link to our YouTube channel, Invest Talk with 2 T's, over there on YouTube, where we post YouTube exclusive content that I encourage you to check out. Lastly, today's show made you think about your financial circumstances, whether or not you're able to meet your financial goals. We would love to chat with you. At KPP Financial, we speak with investors such as yourselves each and every day to help bring a little bit of peace of mind and help them achieve their financial goals. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.